Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 22nd. Well, Bitcoin today extended its breakout and followed through on yesterday's upward dynamic. So that is the highest close we've seen in at least 2 years. So this does mark the completion of the first step above the little base that's been forming over the last year. I think it's important to look at the price on a log scale, because one thing that we've seen on repeated occasions is that people tend to look at Bitcoin and think about how much it's moving in a percentage basis. And that's because the vast, vast majority of people participating in the market are doing so on an unlevered basis. Whereas there are futures, they are, and there's so there is the availability of an opportunity to either short or to take on long positions in a leveraged basis, the majority of people are unlevered. And they will be paying attention to the trend as it formulates on a log scale. Well, the one thing that I think is particularly relevant is we've got now about just over 12 years of or I guess maybe a decade of pricing history for Bitcoin. And we have also got this very lengthy range that's been going on now for the last few years. The price is just on the cusp of breaking on the upside. It is not the first time that Bitcoin has gone sideways for a prolonged period. The last time was between around 2013 and 2017. So it's quite similar in terms of duration. Then we also have to factor in the halvening that has occurred in May. So the limited supply argument is also starting to become more attractive. If we actually go back and look at history, then there was also a relatively lengthy period of consolidation following the accelerated move that we had between 2011 and early 2013. So this price series is primed for additional upside. We have enough of history that we can get a 1,000-day moving average now as well, and we can clearly see that prices do tend to find support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, that is 50% below where the price is today. But one thing we also know about Bitcoin is that it is prone to accelerations. And this is the primary reason why people are interested in it, because they want it to accelerate. They want to participate. Of course, that drags in people from all over the world, and there is an awful lot of money floating around in here at present. Then when we look at Ethereum, it's firming within its first step above its base. And this does look like a price series that has potential to play catch up. Well, one thing that we are certainly seeing is increasing interest internationally for digital currencies. Now, quite whether it is in fact going to be Ethereum or Bitcoin or something else or a stable coin that eventually becomes a common currency for some sovereign entity globally remains very much open to question. But as people are starved of opportunities to speculate on that eventuality, then they will continue to look at Bitcoin and Ethereum and the other potential candidates as well. Then, of course, we've got gold. The reality today is that commodity prices are doing better. And we've seen really quite positive action from industrial metals and from soft commodities. But gold prices were in negative territory today, still holding around the $1,900 area. And part of the reason for that was it's a direct response to some strength coming through in the US dollar. Perhaps not really a strong environment for the dollar, but rather that the renminbi is really quite overextended and is susceptible to some consolidation, so it pulled back in here today. Now, when we then think about, well, what is the animating factor behind speculation right now? Well, 10-year Treasury yields are up to 86 basis points, so they have risen now for every day the last six consecutive days. They're right in the region of the trend mean. and also approximating the peak in the yield from back in June. Well, back in June, when the yield curve got up to about 70 basis points, then it was knocked straight back down again. And when we just simply look at that on a daily basis, then it clearly stands out. Now, the yield curve today is at 71 basis points. So the 10-year is at the region of the trend mean, and the yield curve spread is at 71 basis points. It's at a new high. This is really the signal that if the Federal Reserve is going to intervene to stem the sell-off in treasuries, then this is the point at which we might anticipate that occurring. It's also worth reminding ourselves that when we think about what generally happens after an inversion, we do see that the yield curve tends to surge higher. And it's usually when it is surging higher that we get the greatest stress in the stock market. Now, we haven't had that over the last 6 months because the yield curve has been going sideways. But when we have government bond yields starting to rise and commodity prices across the board strengthening, well, then there is the potential that we're looking at an inflationary outcome. We've seen a number of the commodities completing base formations over the course of the last few weeks. Then when we look at some of the fertilizer companies, they are breaking their respective downtrends. Some of the ingredients companies chemical companies like ADM are pushing on to new recovery highs, having broken their medium-term downtrends. So this does look like there is interest flowing back towards the soft commodities sector. One of the other interesting charts was Robusta Coffee in here today, firming from the region of the trend mean, having broken a really quite consistent medium-term downtrend. We don't have quite the same clear signal from Arabica Coffee. It's been much more volatile. It's pulled back right to the region of the lows, but does appear to be now steadying again from that psychological 100-cent level. Then the big question overhanging the commodity markets is what is going to happen with oil. Sentiment could probably not be as bearish, or even bearish, more bearish than it is right now. There is a clear conclusion has been reached by a large number of investors that the majors are done for. They're going to have to completely get rid of their dividends. They are managing a declining business model. And yet oil prices are double where they were back in April. The price is still holding the region of the trend mean. We've had a large number of people buying cars. And when you buy a car, then you do tend to drive it. And when we then think about the outlook for vaccines, well, Moderna was in positive territory in here today. We had news last night that Pfizer anticipates looking for emergency use for its vaccine later this year. There was also news, I think it was the AstraZeneca trial, but I can't remember exactly which one, that one of the people that died on the trial, and one of the reasons that it was paused, was because of a death from one of the people in the trial, but it turns out that person had been given a placebo. So they hadn't, in fact, received the vaccine. So these are encouraging signs, although obviously with tragic news attached. One thing that is, I think, rather important is that some of the leading advancers in here today were hotels and travel agents. Marriott, for example, has firmed from the region of its sequence of higher reaction lows. Expedia, which is obviously extremely levered to the travel sector, was also up in strong positive territory. So We are starting to see that some of the worst performers and those most susceptible to the loss of business from lockdowns are starting to do better. Then if we look at a company that is a dividend aristocrat like Cisco, where it provides the consumables for large numbers of restaurants and hotels, then it's also continuing to extend its rebound and holding its sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's back above its trend mean as well. So that does suggest that we are getting some interest in recovery candidates. The S&P 500 continues to hold the 3400 point level. There was news today about universal basic income, that the biggest such program is being deployed in Compton, in Los Angeles. Of course, there is another way of thinking about it, in that the $600 in additional unemployment benefits was an additional example of universal basic income, and probably the largest yet. And what it has certainly helped to do was to boost savings. But it's a partial answer to the looming question of what do we do with people who are effectively made unemployed, or that their source of income is destroyed or deleted as a result of digitization. We've had a very significant trend towards the digital economy this year. That is going to be very difficult to recoup. The vast majority of companies that have now deployed into the cloud and are performing a lot more of their functions via apps and cloud infrastructure, well, they're not going to go back to physical infrastructure. The number of people that have enjoyed the convenience of shopping online are unlikely to go back to brick and mortar stores. Or if they do, then they're going to be heavily influenced by both choice and price. So these are very significant. It means that the low end of the value chain will probably do well, and the online will do well, and then the continuing hollowing out of the middle is a potential, I think, significant risk. And that represents a very significant loss of income, because the low-end service jobs, whether it is in retail or in restaurants, are going to be difficult to replace in the short period of time. And obviously there will be more restaurants will open up after others have closed, and people will want to eat out again, and people will get sick of cooking at home. But that is a long transition. It means that there's going to be pressure on governments to hold down interest rates and to continue to run deficits for a significant period. And the only way that that can be done is if governments take over control of central banks. Well, central bank independence has been one of the central pillars of sound governance for most of the last few decades, but it is increasingly coming under threat. So this continued move higher in yields, and against a background where the dollar remains susceptible despite the fact that it was steadier in here today, and then the existence of an alternative bond market where yields are more competitive in China, where you can pick up 3% instead of 75 basis points, that's an additional significant development. I think we are quite similar to where we were all the way back in 2002 and 3. That was when the last time people were very seriously talking about financial repression, and the fact that interest rates were going to remain low for a prolonged period, and that that was also the time when the gold price and commodities started to do well. I thought that this was an important chart because it graphically illustrates just how bad the Fed futures market is at predicting what exactly is going to happen. Generally speaking, when they are in fact cutting, people are predicting that they're not going to cut. When they're not cutting, people predict they are going to cut. And now we're at a significant period where nobody believes the central bank is going to raise rates, because it's virtually impossible to really think about that. How could they possibly raise rates when that would have such an incredibly deleterious effect on the interest expense of governments? But bond yields are rising, so it's certainly going to necessitate very clear central bank action in order to stop those yields from rising. And we are at a point today where it is likely to be an imminent decision. That's also, I think, one of the important characteristics for the yen. The yen has rallied all the way up again to 104 to the dollar. Now the question is the Bank of Japan going to intervene in order to arrest the advance of the yen as well? So we are at a point today where there are a significant number of charts that are testing areas where central banks have historically been really rather reluctant to allow them to strengthen through. And that suggests that we are more than likely going to have significant central bank action in the not too distant future, potentially even by the end of this week. The fact that we are also in the last 12 days before the US presidential election is obviously something that markets are attempting to put a price on, and the uncertainty around that decision is a very clear source of anxiety. But I think it's also important to bear in mind that the VIX index does tend to rise ahead of, or at least to remain at higher levels on average ahead of an election, but that it comes back down immediately afterwards. And the VIX index did not sustain its move up to and through the 200-day moving average today. Instead, it pulled back from the 30 area. So there is, I think, the potential here that the VIX index could start to come back down. And there is, of course, the potential that we may have a stimulus package, whether it is in fact brought into effect before or after the election remains to be seen. But Nancy Pelosi was quoted today as saying is that they're almost there. So there is the potential that we could have an additional stimulus package, and that could quite easily be a bullish catalyst for the stock market. The size of the pullback we've seen over the last couple of weeks is really nothing to worry about in terms of the percentage move. It has simply allowed some short-term overbought conditions to be unwound, and the medium-term uptrends remain intact. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.